And we are Zooming, and we have in-person meetings on Sundays as well as on Wednesdays. And it's just that during the pandemic, we started using Zoom, and we found that it was a wonderful experience for everyone involved. We were able to obtain associates from actually around the world, around the country. And it was interesting to get different perspectives, but the same perspective actually on the philosophy of theosophy. And it's important to understand that the ULT declaration, which will be read shortly, does in many respects determine how our Zoom meetings are run. Excuse us. We use the idea of impersonality. We do not comment on each other's comments, other than the fact that we can say, well, the previous commenter said, well, we don't use the initials that are on the screens or a person's name. And that does make it more comfortable for people who may be a little bit nervous about sharing at meetings because it is so impersonal.
Bye-bye.
So we just want to maintain these ideas, these traditions, and just to make sure that whenever you are not speaking, to please mute your microphone. And if you have to get up and walk around, to stop your video. And it sounds as though somebody is... please mute your phone. Thank you. So, and if you are coming into Theosophy Hall, we do request that you maintain a fragrance-free visit to us. We do have some folks, some associates that are sensitive to fragrances. So we'll read the declaration now. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The truth, the Theosophist, belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So in order for the Philadelphia Lodge to fulfill these ideas, we do hold three meetings a week. As we said, two of them are hybrid meetings, Zoom and in person. And we have one meeting that is just totally Zoom. And we just wanted to say also that the United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So on Sundays, as today, our meetings are run in three different ways. We have a shorter talk or a forum, which will be presented today. And we have panel discussions, and we have a longer talk or a lecture. And there's always plenty of time for questions and discussions. Our Sunday meetings are run with an umbrella topic each month. And next month, next Sunday, we are starting the mystery of male and female. And the first class on Sunday will be the male-female principle in nature. And the doors open at Theosophy Hall at 10:30, and the meeting runs from 11 until 12. On Wednesdays, we're still following our study class schedule, which is Theosophy Hall and on Zoom. And we're still looking at The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We have a library that will open at 6:15 until 7:15. And it is and it is not a lending library. It's a reference library only. And you can prepare for that night's class during that hour period. As we said, we're still working on Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. On Fridays, we have a roundtable discussion group that is totally on Zoom. It runs from 6:30 until 7:30. This coming Friday, we will be looking at an article from In Light of Theosophy. And on Mondays, an email will be sent out to everyone that will let everyone know what the readings for the upcoming week will be. So the companion reading and the ocean reading will be on there, as well as Friday's, the pages for In Light of Theosophy. So we think that's it. Just for the future though, in June, June 21st is ULT Day, the United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission and future. So as we said, we will have a forum today. And the title for today's class is Remembrance, Recollection, and Reminiscence. So we will have the forum presented and then plenty of time for questions and discussion.
Eternity can have neither past nor future, but only the present. The past no more exists than the future. Only our memories survive. Memory is the despair of the materialist, the enigma of the psychologist, and the sphinx of science. Memory is an innate power in thinking beings, and even in animals, of reproducing past impressions by an association of ideas, a faculty depending entirely on the more or less healthy and normally function of the physical brain. In the short span of ordinary existence, memory is too weak to register all of the events of a lifetime. How frequently do even the most important events lie dormant in our memory until awakened by some association of ideas? No memory of a purely daily function of a physical, egotistical, or a lower mental nature, such as eating and drinking. We would think that most folks probably never think about the wealth of knowledge they have on so many and diverse subjects. The weather, for instance, children, philosophy, medicine, clothes, computers, phones, food, cars, nutrition, transportation, and we could go on and on forever of the knowledge that you have. Most of us are a walking, talking, thinking, and sharing encyclopedia. Unlike companies like Google, with its mega network of employees and computer servers and other resources to call upon, you and I, dear heart, are standalone fonts of knowledge, experience, and wisdom. We all know basically how Google retrieves the information it needs for any given subject or moment. But how do we do it? How do we retrieve something from a long, long time ago to a current conversation? All these questions must inevitably lead us to the somewhat intricate subject of memory. But when we think of memory, how is it? It is just a generic name for the innate power within us, thinking beings of reproducing past impressions. Now I really screwed that up, so let me read that. But when we think of memory, know that it is just the generic name for the innate power within us, thinking beings, of reproducing past impressions. Let us assume for the sake of this forum that your name is John or Jane Doe. You live in the typical American life, if there is such a one. You're between the ages of 30 and 70. You go to work, you do your job, you come home tired. Do what you need to do at home, and at the end of the night, you fall into bed exhausted. Now, having done this for weeks, months, and years on end, let me ask you a question. What were you doing on October 10th, 1988? Or what about May the 2nd, 1975? Yeah, I know. Try as you can, it's tough to remember something that you did yesterday, let alone years far removed. So how did you do it? How is it done? What is the trigger? How do I remember things from the past? By an association of ideas suggested by object or by some action of our five essential senses. For example, a special line in a poem may bring back a very special moment. How about a scent from a bouquet or a lyric from a song you just heard? Or maybe a glimpse of a look-alike person from your past? Memory, as we think of it, is a faculty depending entirely on the normal functioning of the physical brain. A problem with the brain usually means a problem with your memory. There are three accepted forms of memory, and they are remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. And indeed, there are many differences between them. In remembrance, we get the idea, but not all the particulars. Not all the particulars that have brought about some feeling, event, or circumstances of the past. For instance, you remember having a great steak dinner at a little place in South Philadelphia about 10 years ago, but you can't remember its name or the street it was on. In recollection, we can collect back, recollect from one point all the other points connected with it. You recall it was Harvey's on South Street below Shunk, or 2nd Street below Shunk, and it had linen pattern napkins, beautiful paintings on the wall, and it was crowded in spite of the pouring rain outside. Obviously, your recollection is more than just a good steak. The third function of memory is known as reminiscence, and most importantly, it is not at all dependent upon the health and physical well-being of your brain. Very few events are impressed upon it or are immediately translatable through the brain by way of the other two aspects or forms of memory called reminiscence and recollection. If we so desired and tried until our brain hurt, we could never make a complete history of all those impressions through those two faculties. So Jane and John, don't fret on those two dates you were asked about earlier. Very few could remember what they did on those dates, unless, of course, they were significant to a birthday, anniversary, or something like that. However, we all have the inherent faculty of recalling, recollecting, and reassembling in such a way as to have a consecutive or synthetic grasp of all such impressions through reminiscence. Reminiscence is that one faculty of memory which applies to the soul. And it is truly fascinating innate quality of the soul. It is brought into function oftentimes not by any present object or occurrence arousing in that direction, such as a song lyric or a scent of a flower might do. It springs directly from the soul itself. It comes from something behind the brain serving merely as a sort of filter or interceptor, a translator of impressions, if you will. It is a direct perception of what was, otherwise known as true memory or soul memory. On the physical plane, the action of soul memory is seen in all those stages through which the human form goes from conception to birth representations, in fact, of the evolution of earlier races. In every act of our existence, we are exhibiting soul memory, whether we realize it or not. The memory of walking is now with us. The memory of talking is with us now as well. We may not remember how nor when we learned to talk or to walk, but we have present with us that knowledge of walking and talking. soul memory is just that, the possession of the knowledge of the past. It is memory which connects us physically with the body through all changes of body, scene, and circumstance. Without it, we should be living merely from impression to impression. There would be no connection whatever with the past, and there would be no sense of self-identity. This is soul memory, and it is indeed possible for every living being to achieve. The barrier for every man is not in the memory, but in the false ideas of living according to which he acts. However much the soul remembers, if we are using the brain contrary to the nature of the soul, the brain cannot translate its impressions. The thinker must transfer the memory of the soul to the brain, and he can do so only by thinking and acting along right lines during active waking consciousness until the brain responds to the ideas and learns to transmit what occurs while the body is inoperative. Then and only then, the true memory of the past that is in the soul is our knowledge in the brain. Now, if my memory serves correctly, my time is up. And now I'd like to refresh your memory with the subject for today: remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence.
Thank you very much. And we often wonder how many people actually understand that there are three different types of memory. It is, it's a fascinating idea. Most people just think that, you know, well, I forgot, or no, I don't remember what I did 10 years ago. How many of us do? But so today's class, we will be looking at, we'll just go over the three different types again, and it's remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. So remembrance is that we kind of get the idea, but we're not real sure of all the particulars around a certain event or something that we did, something that we saw, that kind of thing. And recollection, that's an easy one to remember because we are recollecting back from one point everything that happened. So as the example in the talk was that we had gone to, say we had gone to a, you know, years ago, a really good restaurant. And initially with remembrance, we would just know that we had a good steak. And then with recollection, we can remember where it was and what the name of it was, that sort of thing. But reminiscence then is the memory of the soul. And Mr. Judge talks about this idea in his The Ocean of Theosophy when we're talking about reincarnation, because one of the discussions is, well, how can I remember a past life if I don't remember the past life? How can it be true? How can reincarnation be true if I can't remember what it was? But the soul remembers. But we have a new brain with each life. So this is the reason why we don't remember a past life. It is because of the fact that we do have this new brain. So we're hoping people have come with questions or ideas about this. It's a fascinating topic. because we're all concerned about our memory. And it's that whole thing of you walk into the kitchen to get something. As soon as you walk in, it's like, where did it go? It's not there anymore. So we had a hand here in Theosophy Hall in the back.
We've read that it's actually a protection not to remember past lives, because if, according to Theosophy, we've been in this cycle of evolution, we've been incarnating for 18 million years. So we've done some things that are, you know, not that great. And that it takes a really strong, advanced soul to be able to access the full memory of past lives. And that, we live lives of good and evil, and hopefully, eventually, you know, we come around. But that's basically it.
So the comment was that the philosophy states the fact that we don't remember our past lives is actually a protection, because we may not want to know what our past lives entailed. But that as we advance along our spiritual path, at some point in time, we will be able to remember everything of what we have done. So there was another comment in Theosophy Hall.
Well, these three types of memory, we wonder, when we access them, are we accessing them all from the same hard drive, but just in a different way, one more limited than the other? Or are we accessing, maybe they're stored on different hard drives within our nature? Where might they be stored?
Well, we think that remembrance, which is the type that we just remember one little bit of it, and recollection, which is where we remember that part plus more of, more of the details. We think that remembrance and recollection are from that same portion. It is said the thinker. It is the thinker that, and the thinker is Manus. And so the thinker takes those ideas, and we're not told how, but somehow it gets to the brain, and that's when we're able to access it. Reminiscence, on the other hand, is soul memory. It's considered to be true memory. And so it springs directly from the soul itself. And it's looked at as being a direct perception of actually what was. Now, remembrance and recollection usually are brought to our consciousness by, as was said in the talk, maybe a song. Some people even say, like, to many people, the smell of coffee perking takes them back to their childhood. So it's these kinds of things that remembrance and recollection are more from the thinker, from mind, from Manus, whereas reminiscence springs from the soul itself. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
These ideas are very thinking, for what it's worth, the latest scientific research, right, for what it's worth, is saying a lot of times our memories are flawed, that we don't remember as well as we think we do. And, you know, when we think of Supreme Court cases or crimes, and we have witnesses, that a lot of times our memories are skewed by emotion, the circumstances that were surrounding that event. And that what we think, oh yeah, I'm sure who's read it. A lot of times, because so much of our conscious thought doesn't dictate how we feel. I think it's, you know, again, for what it's worth, 5% of our minds are conscious. And then we have this obscure 95% that is unknowingly dictating our behavior. And, you know, now bring it to the more spiritual view, then that getting through that memory, soul. So many of us spend so little time or so little energy required for that feat to happen. So if you think of the chakras, so many of us, in especially modern society, we're stuck on the lust, the hate, and stress. The first three chakras. To attain that soul permanence for that memory of past lives, you know, you have to be up here, maybe even up here to try to get close. And then the question is it even worth it? If the motive behind it, what is the motive? Okay. You know, so my motive is enlightenment. I want to free myself from this nonsense of having to come back all over and do it all over again. You know, that plays into it. Like, how bad do you want? You know, that, you know, if you keep coming back, there's another argument. You get worse. You know, don't come back better. Don't come back that, oh, one day I'm going to get it. There's an argument that if you come back and it's going to be worse, you're not getting it. Just fall into the same pattern.
We would like to say, in regards to that last comment, that the whole process that the philosophy of Theosophy puts forward is that each life you are gleaning more spiritual knowledge as you move along. And the assumption is that each time you come back, everything that you have learned in that past life will assist you in becoming more spiritual as you move along, not go backwards. We believe, we don't want to say the word believe, but the philosophy puts forth the idea that as we move through each life, we will assimilate everything that we've in the past. Now, to address the idea, the barriers for accessing memory. It is a, if one is focused on the material, if one is focused on self and not on others, our declaration talks about focusing and motive on universal brotherhood. That will open up the mind to the dictates of the soul. And it is, the talk mentioned the barrier for every man is not in the memory, but in the false ideas of life, or courting to which he acts. So it is lower mind that is causing, because the mind is dual. It has a higher, more spiritual aspect, and the lower one that goes to the to more passions and desires. So if we are focused mostly in that lower mind, we will not be able to access some of the reminiscence, some of the spiritual memory. And we can also block some of the others, the recollection and remembrance piece, because we are so focused on the lower aspect. Did you have a comment on this in Theosophy Hall?
Well, regarding, you know, the idea that, yeah, it seems that some people might be coming back and having harder times, or maybe doing worse off than they were in the previous, and maybe it seems like a total downward cycle for the soul. But actually, if the soul in each life is leaning strength and wisdom from the good stuff of the life, then perhaps all these people that we see in these tough conditions, even though they may be self-created, it's because they've come back as stronger souls and are ready to take on more karma from their past. And a lot of stuff they've been up blocking. So the message there is nobody knows the history of that soul.
No.
Best to stand back and watch it.
And many times it's the soul itself. When it's done in the after-death states, it kind of has a preview of what that life, that new life is to come. And they may actually choose to be in a more difficult life. They say that sometimes that soul will maybe look at becoming maybe physically dependent. But it will be also for that family to learn a lesson as well. Theosophy Hall, you had something as well?
Yeah, so the feelings of sitting with as I'm thinking about these different aspects of memory, the recollection piece and practice, is that they're very much layered together. And it's the function of the soul to determine what layer of memory we have ability to have in that moment. So say, for instance, you know, the life circumstance is such that a person is going about the stress of life. Perhaps in those instances when they're so focused on living their day-to-day life, where, you know, we have the turbulence, the ups and downs, the whole range of experience, it might not be as significant for us to have those moments of reminiscence. And yet, I feel like there's a spaciousness that it allows, that we say, for whatever reason, I'm having this sensation that this is a significant thing for me to pay attention to. And I think, the larger question is the ability to have the perspective of saying within any circumstance in one's life, where is this coming from? And where is this linked? Such that anytime we're really drawn to something, anytime we're really propelled from something, all of those fluctuations that we really have significant response to, we can start to track. And I really do believe that from that questioning, we may have spontaneous arisings from the soul, from the spirit, no matter what our ebb and flow is in our material reality, of where those points of connection are, to then further get into the piece of recollection, further into the piece of remembrance. And I'll say additionally, so I work as a hypnotherapist, and one of the things that's very fascinating to me is that in that space, once we're inducted into a space of deep relaxation and what some might call a trance state, that we have the ability to then guide that person back into a point of remembering what otherwise would be blocked. So because they've asked a particular question to understand their motives or other kind of constellation of behaviors related to what they're coming in with, that's where the soul, from that point of reminiscence, will then bring things with such detail and clarity and vividness, kind of to, you know, the speaker's point about suddenly the picture becomes flush and real and you're there again. And yet if you would ask that person in the conscious, you know, point of their day, they wouldn't recall that because it's not a function and of importance for them to see it in that particular moment. And yet when we start to clear away from that, I think all of these things are very much accessible to us.
Yes, we look at the idea of remembrance and recollection more from a physical, the lower mind piece. And then the reminiscence is more of a spiritual attitude because it can bring back a lot of those higher thoughts into somebody's, into their vision. And as we had said, we think it might've been the very first comment that the philosophy puts forth the idea that it's a protection that we don't remember our past lives because in many respects, we may not be able to, at this point in time, in our evolution, we may not be able to handle what has gone on in the past. SL?
In terms of a fundamental principle, theosophy teaches that spirit and matter are not two distinct realities, nor does spirit develop out of matter. They are both two aspects of the same one reality. And so just as it was pointed out that our physical brain can influence the way we experience the three types of memory, soul memory, whether it's of the higher mind or the lower mind, also influences the way we recollect and remember. For example, it was pointed out, our emotions can distort the way we remember things, but emotions are also a very important way of impressing memories. We tend to remember things that are associated with a high level of emotion. And down through the ages, even in our modern memory classes, they teach the use of the imagination using symbols to help us remember small details. So you can recollect everything that was served at that dinner if you can relate it to an image or a picture. So we are actually developing both. It's one faculty of the mind that is being used in different ways.
So the idea of the mind using remembrance and recollection, it's just two different functions. So we have a chat. Do our thoughts get recorded in the brain, the mind, or the Akashic records? let me just move this. Our thoughts are recorded. They are gleaned in the mind and in the astral. And in such a way, they can be accessed. And we would just ask, we're not sure about the Akashic records if somebody wants to finish on that, SL?
So as pointed out, the memory is a faculty of reproducing memories or impressions in substance. Those impressions can be in the brain, they can be in the astral, or the Akashic, but we have to think of those as different degrees of substance, just like we have gas and water and solids are different degrees of water in different states. So far, we have different degrees of substance from the finest to the most material. But memory can be stored in either one of them or any one of them, depending on the nature of the memory. If it's of a high spiritual nature, it's going to be impressed in more spiritual substance, so to speak, the akashic. If it's more passional, earthly, personal, it's going to be stored in the astral and in the brain as well.
Okay. There was a hand up in Theosophil.
You had a question about when the soul is ready for incarnation and is given the overview of the life to come. Of course, it's not told or shown the particulars, but the general principles that are the opportunities to learn from and develop, whatever that means. And it was our understanding that the karma of that soul has put in place. So in a way, the soul, yes, the soul chooses the family, but our understanding is that the family is chosen because of all the thoughts and emotions and actions in the past. Not so much that the soul can like sit above planet Earth and pick what family he wants to go into. We think there's a distinction there.
Yes. It isn't like he's up there looking down and say, I'm going to pick that family. There's electromagnetic pulls between people. And many times it's the families that are pulling back the person leaving the after death state. So there's a connection between all of them. Yes.
Just more food for thought. So I would challenge our memories even important if one is operating in pure consciousness. One is disregards past, future, is only in the present, in pure consciousness, pure awareness. Memories may not even develop.
So
please repeat the contribution.
Oh, that if one is acting from pure consciousness, that maybe memory is not even relevant.
But it's the past.
But
it may do more harm than good.
Well, it depends on what the memory is, of course. And when one is focused on a particular object, the mind, it is said that the mind takes on the shape of that object, of that thought. And then, of course, we have to add the motive always covers it as well, affects it. So when we are looking at a different idea, we don't know how memory could not be impacting the current thought. SL?
In light of the previous contribution, that's interesting in terms of meditation, because when you think of meditation, it's an attempt to focus the mind within in a distinct state of awareness. And what is the obstacle there? It's the memories that spring up spontaneously. Associative memories, recollections, remembrances, all those things that tend to take the mind away from the concentration on a certain idea or a certain state of awareness. And so what the meditator tries to do is learn how to quiet those memories so that the mind can stay focused in the present or in the particular subject of their meditation. So it can influence us, but if we're, as the contributor points out, if we are trying to be focused in a pure state of conscious awareness on any particular subject, the memory has to be made irrelevant, or at least that kind of memory has to be made irrelevant.
Thank you. Theosophy Hall.
So then maybe if we were to take that to its philosophical extreme, then one who is able to live on pure intuition to know what is right to do in the moment, every moment, to that person, it would seem memory is irrelevant, the highest evolved Mahatma. But until we're there, we got a lot to deal with. and appreciate the moments in time when we are in a place where we do feel that we're doing the right thing and we darn well know it. And that's a good place to be.
Yes, and that place can be can be brought to the fore. We often talk about the mundane, you know, how the mundane life can be affected by more constant thinking on a higher plane. And they talk, you know, we talk about the sacred, finding the sacred in the mundane. And by doing that and trying to do it on a consistent basis, we can bring those thoughts to a more focused, conscious level. And by being on a higher spiritual plane, we can break those bonds that the lower mind has that keeps interrupting us, especially when we're trying to meditate. But by looking at universal brotherhood, trying to help others, finding that sacred in the mundane, and by trying to do these things, then we will be more open to that reminiscence on a higher plane, true memory. Anybody else have anything? SL?
We think the experience of dreaming is a good example to understand the two different levels of memory. We know we can have a very vivid dream, but if it's not impressed on the brain, or if we don't give it a certain amount of attention when we wake, it's completely going to disappear. And get lost in the daily activities. And so many people journal their dreams to help them remember it. But on the other hand, it doesn't solve the mystery of where did that experience come that we remembered? We remember that we have in dreams the solutions to great problems, inventions, warnings, intuitive. Job said in dreams and visions of the night, a man is instructed. So dreams are not only a gateway to that reminiscence, that soul memory of prior previous experiences, but also have to be filtered through the brain and retained in the brain and the mind if we're going to be able to use them on this state of physical awareness. Consciousness.
Yes, it always comes back to the state of the brain. That and in regards to dreams, we know that, you know, while we're dreaming, it always seems so real. But then something will, you know, maybe we hear a noise in the background or the alarm goes off or whatever. And then as it's coming through, those different levels of, you know, those different levels coming back to awakeness for whatever reason. And there are some people that can remember all of their dreams. And then there's others that, you know, maybe at only at awakening, if they were dreaming, they remember that one, but not earlier in their sleep cycle. So, it always seems to come down to the brain and how the brain is functioning. And as we've been saying, it is affected by mind, by the thinker, as to how much that brain will retain and be able to express. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Just one more comment. I've been the educator for a second. I'm retired. But we look at standardized testing. And the lowest level of cognitive ability is memorization. Given a fact.
Did you say memorization?
Memorization.
Okay.
In memory. You just level one, what color is the sky? I told you it was blue. Sky is blue. And then as we move up, the taxonomy moves kind of higher order thinking, comparing, analyzing, synthesizing, summarizing, is worth a little bit more. Demonstrates a little bit more cognitive ability. So just memory alone, it should be put in context.
Thank you. Yeah, memory needs to be what we say, as was just said, put in context of what it is that is being done at the particular time. And we're all concerned about, as we get older, that we know that we will be dropping words, memory of different activities that we've done in the past. How many people actually remember? Well, there are people that remember a lot of their childhood, and then there's those that don't. And especially if there has been some unfortunate accident or treatment, many times those memories will sit and kind of fester if they're not addressed. So memory is an extremely complex thing. And remembrance, when it comes to, if there's some kind of abuse in the past, many times that people will not remember the details because it's too painful. So there's so much that is in there.
Your daughter or Leslie? What? Are you saying Leslie? What are you saying?
Can we mute the phone, please? SL?
Yes, we've spoken of the brain as though it's the only organ of memory in the body, but Theosophy would teach that every cell in the body is conscious, alive, and has a memory of its own. We even speak of muscle memory and so forth. So that's an important thing to realize, that memory does not require a nervous system as we understand it, that being impressed with experience belongs to all the kingdoms of nature, our cells and atoms and so forth. So it points to the idea that consciousness, life, awareness, impressionability, the ability to give off those impressions, is a universal experience, not just in the human kingdom.
And one of the interesting things, we're glad that was brought up. Unfortunately, we're almost done, but muscle memory. We have all seen, when learning how to play an instrument, that's a memory that eventually will get into the musculature, because we know that if we, once somebody learns how to play an instrument, that if they actually think about it, they don't seem to play as well. They kind of mix up the finger positions. So as was said, memory, there is cell memory and there is muscle memory. And we hope everybody remembers this class. And we want to thank everyone and for the participation, and have a good week, and hope to see you all on Wednesday. Thank you. Meeting is over.